Welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Corey Rabin. Happy that you're joining us today. If you like the episode that you're about to hear, what you need more of, and that we're going to give it to you, we're going to give it to you as best as we can. We got a great guest today.
You've told me so much about this guest.
We would not even have this studio, this podcast studio, were it not for Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, guys.
Well, welcome.
And welcome. You're beautiful, might I add.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So are you.
Oh, thanks.
Takes one to know one.
Oh, I love it. Welcome, though. Seriously, thank you for joining us.
Of course.
And
thank you.
I really can't wait to hear your story.
Well, let's dive in, shall
All
we?
Right. Yes. So tell us.
Well, I grew up out here near Malibu, and I've been raised out here like most of my life. I toured with my father growing up as well. My father is Eddie Money. The singer, the rock singer. So I was raised in the music.
Had a couple hits.
Yes. So I was raised in the music business, like tour buses and big shows and growing up on stage with him performing. So my life is like a rock and roll rock star's daughter is a little bit different than everybody else's, but everybody has their own story, but that's part of mine. But yeah, I was raised out here. I graduated out here from high school. And after I graduated from high school, I went straight on tour with my dad. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah.
So did growing up in that environment, do you think that really, you know, influence your addiction?
You know, I think just like how people envision rock stars, like Janis Joplin was my idol. And I was reading biographies on her and how she liked to drink like whiskey. And so a lot of that kind of played into my imaginary of like what I should be as a singer or a performer. And I've always had kind of like a loose spirit, like personality. So once I started drinking alcohol, that just all kind of like added fuel to the fire. Mm. And I felt more alive in a way on stage, and that I could kind of just live this rock star life, even though I was basically just living in the shadows. I was, you know, trying to be something that I wasn't at the time. You know, I wasn't being myself when I was drinking. But yeah, I think being raised like on the road, there's a lot of alcohol and there's, you know, there's a lot of partying. So, I mean, it was hard to not get into that. After my father passed, it's been such a huge weight on me to understand who I am as a person without him, and also to like figure out exactly where I want to go with my music and what I want to do with my career. But luckily with sobriety, I've been able to kind of hone down exactly, you know, take the steps and figuring out like what I want to do with this part of this chapter of my life. Mm. So it's important to me to just kind of not overshadow my own dreams, but also live his legacy by singing his music, honoring him, but also staying true to myself now through sobriety.
I love that. I think that must be, you must have put a lot of pressure on yourself for a long time.
I still do.
I can imagine.
I still do.
I recently lost my father, and I can't imagine that pain of like trying to also live up to a legacy plus grieving. Like,
yeah.
That can't be a good feeling.
Well, I think legacy could go in all sorts of different terms. You know, even after they passed, you're still trying to live for them.
Right.
You know, and that's a legacy in itself, whether it's, you know, they don't have to be a rock star with famous songs. Like, you want to honor them after
Absolutely.
They've passed.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying the added pressure.
No, I know. Help. But yeah, no, I totally, yeah. But I just want to make sure that like I could like be able to reach all sorts of people with grief and sobriety, because
yeah.
That's a big, huge part of my life. And I feel like that's what I'm meant to do, is to really help people with their grief and understand that. And that's what I've been doing with my music. And I've been writing about like the different stages of grief that I went through in my addiction and kind of like overcame it. And I have a song called Legacy that talks about how I want to live for you so I can live for me. Because if I don't think about how, you know, my dad wants me to live, you know, in a way, it's like I have to think about how he wants me to live my life. Because when he passed away, I did not want to live. I wasn't thinking about anybody but myself. Woe is me. I can't do this anymore. Mm. And I wasn't looking at the damage I was doing to all the people around me.
Yeah.
So after he passed and I got sober, I wrote Legacy. And I thought, you know, if I could just live for you, then I could live for me. And that's like something that I do every day because I want to honor him and all the people that have passed away. Like, I recently just lost my grandfather.
I'm sorry.
And I appreciate that. But it's really hard. And if I didn't have the people in the program and, you know, in the meeting that I go to, I was able to log in on Zoom and tell them, like, listen, like, my grandfather's dying. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to express these emotions and all of that. And they told me, a good friend of mine told me, like, why don't you write down the things that you want to say? Because in that moment, like, you don't know what to do. And that's the first time I dealt with death in, like, in sobriety. And I wanted to do it the right way. And they told me to write, you know, like, all the things that I wanted to say. And I remember telling my grandfather, like, I promise you I'm going to stay sober. And that was 100% gonna, like, for me, that was like a reason to be sober and like, I can't let you down. And, you know, so everybody has like their thing. But for me to tell my grandfather, well, he was like, you know, really sick and about to pass, that I'm gonna stay sober, I'm like, I am not gonna just F this up.
I think just the fact that he even witnessed you in sobriety, I'm sure that he was so proud. I mean, I'm sure that he was so proud of you. And, yeah, you know, I can't imagine, I, you know, when we're using, we're in darkness.
Yeah.
There's complete, it's like the Eeyore cloud, you know, mm-hmm. It like follows us.
Yeah.
And when we're not, it's kind of like this light that shines through us and people can see it. And I think it's really magnetic.
Yeah.
You know,
and especially in that moment where you need to be there for your family and be like a support and be a rock. And, you know, you have to, and like, be there for my mom and my grandmother. But I mean, I have to be honest, when my father was diagnosed with cancer, I was not sober. And that was difficult for me to come to terms with. And I didn't really recognize or thought about the program at the time. You know, we had like a reality show and everything was going so well. And all of these things, like, I know all of this dark shit started happening. You know, it's like I lost my dog while my dad was in the hospital.
Oh my God.
Like, and then like the day after my dad passed, my great uncle passed, and then my other dog passed. It's like all of this stuff started happening. So the grief and the alcohol and the drugs came into play hard.
You know, though, I'm impressed, and I'll tell you why. I have a best friend, and she watches, so she'll probably watch this, and she had a similar situation. She lost her father, then lost her, you know, best family friend, then her grandmother. That it was like one after the other,
yeah.
You know, and it's been this like very grief-stricken story, and it's still to this day, like 20 years later, still so hard for her to cope. And it seems like you have taken this and really transformed this grief into something beautiful that you can really, I mean, touch people's lives with your music, with your sobriety, with your strength.
I really hope that that's the case because, you know, it is the dark Eeyore cloud in the room. Like, not a lot of people want to talk about it. But when I think of myself, like, in my grief and my addiction, that's when the suicidal thoughts came in. That's when I was doing all the wrong things. That's when I was completely running off the edge of a cliff, not caring. And there were some moments in there where I was like, I'm going to die. Or, you know, like an overdose that, you know, it's like I'm like dying right now. And then like, how do I move this? How do I flip that? And it's like, even in moments like that, you could still come and shut down again. It beats you. It beats you down. And the grief and like not wanting to live. And for me, after I lost my dad, I completely lost my identity. Like, I've always been Eddie Money's daughter. I mean, that was like how I got out of speeding tickets, or that's how I make a boy like me. You know, that was 100%.
I'm sure that worked.
Yeah. Like, you like the song, I'll get you tickets to this.
Sometimes it's, you know, you use it in your favor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could still use it today, but I mean, I'm trying to find ways, like, especially now that he's gone and finding out who I am without him. Yeah. You know, and he'll always be a part of me.
For sure.
But it's just like the grief and addiction, they just go hand in hand. Like the devil just grasps you. And it's like, okay, you're not going to make through this.
I want to, though, know, like, what it was like growing up in this famous environment. I'm sure you were surrounded by other celebrities. You know, I grew up in New York where I saw celebrities all the time. Seeing celebrities isn't a thing for me, right? But you're like now firsthand, like they're part of your family.
Yeah.
Like, what was your first drink like? What was your road? What did that look like?
My first drink. Well, my first drink was, I remember back in high school, I was always trying to fit in. It was back in high school. I was always trying to fit in. And, you know, once, I think it was Captain Morgan. Ooh. Which is absolutely terrible. Like if I think of Captain Morgan, I immediately want to throw up and have a hangover. Like, it's disgusting.
That's how I feel about Absolut Vodka.
It's disgusting. But yeah, that was also the case growing up and being in school with other people. Like, I didn't know my identity then either. So it's like you have like this whole lifespan until you get to like now where I'm like, okay, now I'm getting it figured out. But, you know, I didn't know which crowd to be with because girls would pick on me and I don't know why, but I just always wanted to be, you know, like everybody else. They want to be accepted. They want to be everybody's friend. Mm-hmm. So I just chose the group of people that drank and smoked pot. And that's where it kind of started for me.
Did your parents did they tell you, you know, we don't want you doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Or get it together.
100%.
You know, this isn't us kind
well,
of thing.
My dad, he wasn't drinking. Like, he was in the program. And then my mom, she just, like, never drank, never smoked, nothing. So they worked really, I mean, honestly, like a normal person. The only thing she did was, like, shop.
I agree. So you were going along the lines of wanting to know about growing up years. But yeah. Frankly, I'm more interested in the turning point.
Well, and since you're interested, no,
who's in control here?
Nobody.
It sounds
God
like
God seems to be. Yeah. I don't know.
All right, ladies, all right. Please. The first time you tried to get sober, what went right? What went wrong?
You know, to be honest, there were throughout my career of drinking and using. I had done a couple stints and a couple rehabs, you know, since from a young age, you know.
What was your first?
My first. I think I might have been like a sophomore in high school, went to a rehab, came back out. I mean, for me, like, there's like such a period of time that's like kind of like a gray cloud. I don't know if that's just because I drank so much that those memories aren't clear to me.
Kind of mushed together.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like a hodgepodge of like, okay, here's my rehabs, you know, here's me after that, you know. But yeah, I mean, I would go to rehab and I'd get out and then I'd be okay. And then, you know, I'd just find that click, those people that drank. And it was obviously the disease and the addiction, but it was just like being lost in who I was and trying to find, you know, comfort in people that didn't necessarily care about themselves either. So, you know, and it's hard because I love people, like, no matter who you are. But then when you connect yourself to a group of people that like are in the midst of their addictions or drinking or whatever, I mean, I laugh it off, but it's sad. It's really sad, like, how deep, like, I put myself into those situations, because I just really wanted to get more messed up than everybody else for whatever reason. Even before my dad died, you know, it was like, I was the girl you were going to party with because I was the rock star's daughter. And like, I'm going to show you how it's done. And that's the expectation for me with my disease that I thought I had to live up to. Like the Janis Joplin, like my idol. I needed to just be that girl, that wild child, like, get in, buckle up. Like, we're going to go get messed up.
So the time before you went to Karen, you stayed sober for a while.
I did. I just remember I was past, like, just like basically, you know, like just grasping for life, you know. And I was, because I had, my father had passed, and it was like years of heavy drinking and heavy drug use. And I got to the point where it was like I had like a scare with an overdose, and then I went back into it. And I just remember there was a point where I was like almost like embarrassed myself in front of like my best friend's family, and I was like, okay, this is the last drink I'm going to have, you know? And then the next day I didn't drink. And then I found my way back. I found myself in Malibu at Pier 10, I think it is. There was a meeting there and I started connecting with people over there. And for a couple months I started going there, and then I thought, okay, I got this. You know, I don't need the program. I don't need to like go to these meetings. Like, I'm just going to stay on the even keel. And I stayed sober, but I was not spiritually fit.
Right, you're miserable.
Yeah, but during that time I took some voice recordings that I wrote into my phone when I was in my addiction, singing songs into my phone. and I started to listen to those, and I wrote down what I was singing, and I took those melodies and I put them together. And then that first year that I had, I went in the studio and I put those songs and laid them down, you know. And that was hard for me, because when I'm listening to myself in like the pit of my addiction and my grief, and I'm going like, man, this is hard, you know, but I wanted to do something with it. I didn't want all of that grief and addiction to go to waste. Like, I mean, those were years. I constantly feel like I'm late for my life. Mm. You know, like I need to do this now because of all of that time that I just threw away. So I just wrote down what I had in my phone for my voice memos. I had a song called Masochist, a song called I'm Losing It, song, you know, and Masochist was about basically being out and like having everybody laugh at you, but I didn't care because I knew I was the most messed up person out there, and they were all going to be like, okay, well, she's a mess. But that was like, for me, it was like I was just feeding into that, that shame, that guilt, that everything. And that's what, you know, like, give me the drink. Like, I'm going to just dive into this pain and I'm not going to care because I'm like, I love hurting myself, you know, with my disease, you know? So, and I did Masochist, and I have a song called The Other Side where, you know, I went outside and I just started singing to the sky. And, you know, these are all little things that I sang into my phone. And so I don't know what made me do it, but I was like, okay, well, I know I have some ideas. Like, I know I wasn't like in my right mind, but if I'm sober now and I listen to these, I could, you know, properly put these things together.
So you didn't waste all that time.
No, but yeah.
It's a little risky to go about it that way.
I wouldn't suggest doing songwriting exactly like that, but
you know, what occurs to me, you said you feel like late for my life. Now, also on the other side of it, when you were younger, you were also kind of rushing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of funny. Yeah. The two together kind of are, they're almost balanced, that you're right where you're supposed to be right now.
Oh, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, because you were, you know, acting like a big girl when you were a little girl.
Yeah.
Right.
So in terms of your, a lot of the people that are watching, well, our expectation is we're attracting people who are trying to figure out how to get their shit together.
Yeah.
How do you do this thing? So talk a little bit about what you do to be able to maintain your sobriety, to create more balance in your life, try to instruct some people as to things that they might consider doing.
Well, I have a sponsor that I work with, you know, work with the steps. I have some really great friends that I found. Tanner is my best friend, you know, and I lean on those people to help me. Like when there's times where I just don't know what's happening or like what to do with my emotions. I love the gym. It helps me kind of like get into that state of mind and meditate and kind of work through like the angst and the anxiety. Singing helps me. I spend a lot of time with my family and a lot of time with my dog. Just the people that I find the most comforting. I've kept my circle pretty small. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that I'm not friends with the people that still drink or whatever. I just stay away from it. I prefer to be at a distance. Going to bars isn't really a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. I've tried to go out dancing a few times and it's not that I have the urge to drink anymore, but I think once you find like a great community, like a great fellowship, and you have a great sponsor, and you know, you have your parents or grandparents or brothers or sisters or just really close friends to talk to and lean on, and meetings, of course. You know, I have Zoom meetings that I even do that are like in Australia, like at 12 o'clock at night, I'll log in and there's all sorts of people from like Spain and this. And that's always fun for me
because
I like, you know, when I'm home and it's like, you know, late at night, I want to talk to some people with some real time from like another country. And I find that fun.
That's great.
You know, I just it's so much fun. It's called Desert Island Discovery or something like that.
Oh, I like that.
And it's so cool. And I log in and it's only like 20 something people, but they know me. Mm-hmm. And like at first it's like no makeup and I'm crying. I'm like, this is what's happening. I don't know anybody here. Like you have to open up about like what's going on with you and really be vulnerable to the process, or else you're just kind of like stuffing all of that down and you're just creating a whole nother spiral in your head that you're not taking care of.
When we first met a few months ago, I found your willingness to be vulnerable in front of a bunch of strangers, really. There had to be 100 something people in that room. And, you know, the reason that everybody couldn't stop clapping is because you were out there and you were you. And, you know, you just left it all out on the field, so to speak. Very attractive.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, that's the Legacy is a really, really tough song to sing because I'm singing it to my dad. And it's like when I look up and I'm singing to him. So that song gives me like a lot of strength. And, you know, it's important to me to stay connected with the higher power and with the people that have passed because, you know, they're still here, you know. Yeah. But the legacy, yeah, that was tough for me. That was really, really tough.
No, I melted.
And I had a lot of people come up to me and say, like, you know, my father passed. And this is what will happen in the meetings. Like, oh, my dad passed right. too. Or, yeah. or my mom passed or something like that. Or, yes, I just lost my dog. Or, you know, and you'd be like, I understand. Ugh. I've been there. Yeah. You know, and it's just like that. It's like, oh, you almost feel just warmer. But even though it's like there's still that weight, you almost just feel like, oh, can we talk about it?
Yeah. You know, how many people are probably hearing your story and maybe saying, I grew up in a family that maybe they weren't artists, but my father had this legacy I had to live up to. Mm-hmm. And because so many people imagine addicts and alcoholics as these like bums in the street that went crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's like this podcast has really brought to light these incredible people who some of them are super successful. Mm-hmm. Some of them are super talented. Some of them came from nowhere, you mm-hmm. know, and it's like kind of all this mishmash of people. And it's like, wow, you were a CEO and you are an alcoholic and yeah. you were, you know, had all the opportunity.
Yeah.
And ended up, you know, so it's kind of like people can relate and say, wow, I was there too.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's, you know, what the rooms and like the program is really all about is connecting with people. It like doesn't matter what your story is. Mm-hmm. There are similarities there. Mm-hmm. Like my story may be different, but I still have the grief and the addiction and the insecurities exactly. and, you know, like all the bad things that have happened to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I could relate yeah. on that level, yeah. you know, I mean. I know my dad was like famous rock star, but you know, somebody else feels the same way about their dad. You know, their dad might not have been a rock star, but in their eyes,
it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
In the end of the day, this disease doesn't really care what yeah. you look like, no, where you came from, who your dad was. It's no. just like
it's identifying
bozo on the bus.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
So you have a question you want to ask Jesse yeah. before we wrap?
Oh boy!
So if you can go back. And tell younger Jesse kind of, you know, whether it's advice or say something or you know, what age would you be and oh. what would you say? You could be 5, you could be 10, you could be, you know, 2018.
What advice would I give myself?
Or just anything. Just tell yourself something. What age do you picture when I say that?
What to like change everything?
No, it could be anything. Like it could be, you know, you are genie. Enough. It could be you, you know, don't do that. It could be anything you want.
That's a tough one. Because I, of course, I'd be like, don't
drink. I'm so proud of myself.
And don't do drugs. You know? You wouldn't like, those would be like the main things, you know?
See,
like
I would still do the drugs. I loved them. but I would probably.
Your face.
You know, and I would get
sober.
I'm not
sure that's what we're going for.
Right. No, but, you know, some people want to change their trajectory and some people don't. I'm the type of person that, you know, yes, there are things I regret. But yeah. no, I'm being a drug addict, being an alcoholic made me who I am today.
Yes,
you
very
know?
True.
And so, you know, there are things I would say to myself, but.
I would probably say. You know, take care of yourself and take the time to find out who you are and, you know, love yourself more and be there for your family.
And how old would you be?
I would probably be 11.
11. Okay.
See, we ask this question to most every guest. And for me, it's about, I know I used... Because I felt like when I used, I was a better version of myself, that I needed to change somehow to be more accepted by other people, to get more dates, to do whatever it was I wanted to do at that stage. Mm-hmm. That's why I was using.
Yeah.
The advice I would give myself is, you're perfectly fine exactly as you are.
Exactly.
Because from my arc in my life, what it was is, I didn't think I was so terrific. Mm-hmm. I used drugs and alcohol, connected with people, and did things that I don't regret. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot from them. I had a lot of fun until it wasn't so much fun. Mm-hmm. And what I found out on the other side is, I was fine at the beginning.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was.
Yeah.
But I'm who I was to start with, but now it's terrific.
Yeah.
So for me, I mean, that's kind of what's behind that question. Mm-hmm. Why the hell did I do that to start?
Yeah.
I did that to start because I didn't feel like I fit in very well. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that anymore.